Good morning. Thank God it's Friday. So we have four appeals to hear on this last day of our week of oral argument, and we're counsel, we're familiar with the cases. We've read your briefs, the authority cited in your briefs, at least portions of the record. You don't have a lot of time this morning. Get straight to the heart of your argument. We're going to have some questions, but be mindful of the traffic lights, and when the red light shines, it's time to wrap it up. If, you know, you're answering a question, though, from us, you're on our time, and you won't lose any rebuttal time if that's something that applies to you. We're going to start this morning with United States versus Hollington. Ms. Lennon?
May it please the court. My name is Valerie Lennon. I represent the appellant, Dr. Scott Hollington. At this time, may I reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal?
Sure.
Turning straight to the question issued by the court last week about the concurrent sentence doctrine.
Let me just cut you off on that. Okay. So that was from me. I probably should have made it more specific. So count 13 charges, the way I view it, it charges two separate offenses. It charges illegal distribution of a Schedule II drug, and it also charges illegal distribution of a Schedule IV drug. He was only sentenced on Schedule II for count 13, as I read it. Doesn't that solve your objection to count 13?
Your Honor, if I could ask for a clarification, which one is the Schedule II and which one is the...
Schedule II is Adderall, and Schedule IV is...
Ambien.
Ambien. And my argument centered around Ambien.
Right.
But he was sentenced for Adderall.
Adderall.
And it looks like the evidence for that is more than sufficient and wasn't challenged.
Well, the conduct, and stop me if I'm getting away here, the conduct goes to both. So it was three statements on count 13. And that goes to both. And I did say something in the reply brief that was wrong, and I need to apologize both to Ms. Gershow and to the court. I said that he was charged with just Ambien. He was charged with Ambien and Adderall, and that was wrong.
Right.
I apologize to the court.
Right.
Yeah.
The conduct applies to both. So it was three statements that he made, which was, how do you support your habit? Can I see your swimsuit? And then he made a statement about how he lost his virginity. And the government argued in closing that those statements somehow were outside the course of professional conduct, that supported a finding that was outside, and that applied to both Ambien and Adderall.
Yeah, but I'll just say, just speaking for myself, I mean, I think you've got a good argument on Ambien because she was, in fact, suffering from sleeplessness. It seems like she wanted Ambien. That was kind of the point of her problem. And then he asked some weird questions, but they were just weird questions. You don't make an argument about Adderall, probably because she didn't need Adderall. That actually wasn't prescribed for any purpose that was medical in nature, as far as I can tell. And so we're left with a count that includes, just speaking for myself, includes two separate offenses, but your client was convicted of both of those offenses. And
in a single count,
within the context of a single count, and got a sentence for that count that was based entirely, if you look at the PSI, on the sort of the sub count or the offense that you don't challenge.
So, Your Honor, the jury did find that it was a legitimate medical purpose for both of those, for both Ambien and Adderall. In count 13.
That's true. They said it was outside the course of
professional conduct.
Right.
So they did find it was a legitimate medical purpose.
Well, but KW testified that your client prescribed her the Adderall without reviewing medical records, that she provided without checking her vital signs or performing any physical assessment. So the jury could reasonably find that was outside the course of professional practice.
Your Honor, I would say that goes to diagnosis and treatment, that diagnosis and treatment goes to legitimate medical purpose.
All of this is kind of new. This wasn't what was raised in the brief. It seemed, I mean, looking at it, it looked to me like it was sufficient, but going back to Judge Brasher's point, that's not what was challenged, and that's what he was actually sentenced on. So any error, it seems to me, as to the Ambien is harmless.
Your Honor, I disagree because the conduct goes to both Ambien and Adderall. So the statements that the government argued in closing, those three statements, it goes to both Ambien and Adderall. So I would
this
disagree.
Is a sufficiency argument, not something about what the government's arguing.
So sure, sufficiency of the evidence goes to count 13 in total. It wasn't broken into two separate counts. It's one count in total.
Okay. I think I derailed you by issuing that question, so please go on to whatever else you'd like to talk about.
Sure. And if we could turn to, we also challenge the counts. Let me be clear, I do not make any argument regarding ELM, so that's not before the court. Okay. So the counts regarding DA and A and B. So specifically regarding DA, Dr. Hollington made the prescription, and then he met her 3 days later. Now, the district court viewed this as coerced sexual conduct, but he made the prescription, gave her this prescription, and then she voluntarily met him 3 days later. So what I would argue to the court that evidence is insufficient to find him guilty. So to be clear, the cases that were provided to this court were Shaker.
He could do that in anticipation.
She could also not show up. She could also call the police, yeah, and she didn't. So in the cases that were provided to the court were Shaker and Heaton. Those doctors were on notice, either from another doctor or from the state medical board, that conduct was not acceptable. Because the standard under Ruan is knowing that it was outside the course of professional conduct. There was no evidence in that case of that. Now turning to A and B, that's a little bit more, let me just get to her testimony really quick. Again, it's knowing. There was no evidence in this case that Dr. Hollington knew that his conduct was outside the course of professional conduct. And it's a lot closer here that it was a consensual sexual relationship with A and B, certainly given her testimony that she was going to get anything out of him that she could.
Yeah, but and this seems to be the government's argument, is that the thing that takes this outside the course of sort of doctor patient is that she's trading the sex with the drugs? She's effectively paying for the prescriptions with sex?
That was the government's argument. But yeah. Again, the standard under Ruan is knowing, and he's trading the prescription, not the drugs. So that's, I mean, I know that
yeah,
sounds okay, like a
yeah,
nuance.
Same difference, but I guess.
Well, surely the jury can infer, it's just common sense that it's not, that exchanging sex for drugs is not professional behavior.
There certainly can infer that, but there's also a lack of evidence that Dr. Hollington knew that this was outside the boundaries of professional conduct.
If the jury could infer that, then why couldn't the jury infer that a doctor would know that he's not supposed to be
right,
doing that? That's not the way medical practice works.
And that's particularly when there was discussion about providing the drugs, and then he asked for sex, and then they meet up later. He says, I'll take care of the drugs, right?
I'll take care of the prescription.
In the case of DA, they discuss meeting outside the office. So it's not like the two were unconnected, the before and the after.
Sure. She didn't have to show up, though, right? She could have called the police. She could have called the state medical board, but she showed up anyways.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody's saying that. I guess it's whether it was consensual in the sense that this was a good deal for both parties or whether it wasn't, it doesn't seem to be dispositive of whether it was within the course of normal medical practice, right?
And there's a distinction between knowing or morally reprehensible and knowing, and there was certainly a lack of evidence of that.
How would you think the government could establish that he knew that this was outside the scope of medical practice?
Expert testimony, certainly in the Heaton case, there was that doctor was on, he had been alerted by the state medical board that those relationships needed to stop, and he continued them. Okay. So in the Shaker case also, he was alerted by another doctor that she didn't need those prescriptions as well. So in both of those cases, there was some sort of alert from either another doctor or the state medical board that there was something amiss with these patients, and Dr. Hollington didn't have that here. And it looks like we just have a difference of opinion about what was necessary here. If the court doesn't have any other questions, about any of the other arguments in the brief. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Ms. Lennon. So, since you didn't use 2 minutes of your time, we'll give you 6 if you need it. Ms. Kershaw, welcome back.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning, and may it please the court. I'd just like to take a second to introduce Tiffany Nick, who's at counsel's table with me. She'll be arguing the second argument on behalf of the United States, and this is her first argument before this court. It seems like the court
understands. So you're asking me to go easy today?
I would never ask that, Your Honor.
I don't know if he could if he wanted to.
It seems like the court understands the government's argument pretty well. I just want to briefly touch on the expert issue. No expert was required to establish that conduct fell outside the usual course of professional practice. The jury didn't need specialized knowledge to know that a doctor cannot trade drugs for sex. This wasn't a close question. It wasn't about proper dosage or examination or the adequacy of a particular prescription. This was a doctor acting like a drug dealer. And the jury can also infer from how far this deviated from the standard professional standards that he was acting knowingly. This court in Ron said that, as in every case, knowledge can be inferred from circumstantial evidence, and that the more unreasonable defendants' asserted beliefs or misunderstandings are, especially as judged against an objective criteria like usual course of professional practice, the more likely the jury will find that the government has met its burden on knowledge. And that's exactly what happened here. So,
can I ask just a practical question about that? You had an expert at trial, right? The government had an expert who testified about the necessity of urine screens and kind of all that stuff. Is there, I mean, I just found it odd that there wasn't any testimony from that expert who was already there why you would not be having sex with your patients in exchange for prescriptions.
Your Honor, I think just because it's so obvious and we didn't want to insult the jury's intelligence by telling them that you can't a doctor can't trade drugs for sex. And I would just like to point out with Heaton and Shelton, those were slightly different cases. And first of all, even though they had an expert in that case, that doesn't mean that they needed an expert in that case. But in those cases, they involved sort of ongoing consensual relationships. I think in Heaton, one of the relationships started before he prescribed controlled substances. And I can see a difference between a jury not understanding that if you are in a relationship with someone and having sex with them, you can't provide them controlled substances, versus you can't coerce a patient to have sex with you by using drugs, your access to controlled substances and consideration. I mean, that is the classic case of a doctor acting as a drug dealer, which, if all going all the way back to the Supreme Court's decision and more, is what this statute is intended to criminalize.
Could you address the count 13 issue? So I understand why it was done, because it was sort of the same victim, and So there were sort of these two different drugs. But it seems very odd to me. I mean, these drugs are scheduled differently. Their sentencing's like the maximum for Ambien is like half the statutory max for Adderall. Was this correctly charged? I mean, what are we to make of this?
So a couple of things. First of all, you know, the manner, typically speaking, the type of drug that's distributed would just be a means of committing the offense. They could commit the offense by either means. The jury could have found based on either one. And I think because there were two different drugs with two different drug schedules, we did a special verdict for the jury so that they could actually say which ones they found. And I don't think that was necessary, but because they did it, we have a very clear record now that they found the defendant guilty on for distributing both. And, you know, I had raised this as a, you know, independent ground argument under Supopo, but I think the court could also apply the concurrent sentence doctrine in
this.
Yeah,
see, the independent ground thing just doesn't seem like it makes sense, because let's say it had been flipped and there was insufficient evidence for Adderall. Well, his sentence was entirely based on Adderall. I mean, he got he got above the Ambien statutory max. So we couldn't say we affirm right? Because you didn't challenge the Ambien part of it.
I mean, I think you could because they've waived that argument. It was
How could you? Because his entire the sentence was is only legal because he was convicted of Adderall. So I mean, if you flipped it, there's no way we could affirm the conviction.
Well, I think the argument would be they waived their challenge to the Adderall because they didn't brief it, and so you.
Well, no. You're not addressing my hypothetical. In my hypothetical, they challenge the Adderall sentence, but they don't challenge the Ambien. They challenge Adderall, but not Ambien.
They challenge the Adderall conviction,
right. Yeah.
And they don't challenge the Ambien.
We couldn't just affirm that and say, well, you didn't challenge one of the two things that the government stuck in there, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so why could we do it? I mean, since we can't do it now either, at least under your theory, like I mean, you argue in the brief that if the government charges like 15 different drug crimes within one count and the jury convicts you of that count, then even if you only sold someone Tylenol, well, that's not illegal, but you know what I'm saying, that even if the only evidence was that for the lowest level count that got you the lowest possible sentence, that we would just affirm and say, well, you didn't challenge all these other things. That doesn't seem right.
I think I'm not exactly understanding.
Well, why don't we simplify this? You would agree that any error here is harmless.
Yes.
Because he was sentenced for the offense that has the higher sentence.
Yes.
And is the offense for which they've made no challenge.
Yes.
I think Judge Brasher's point is if it had been the opposite and you agreed, then we would have a problem, right?
Yes. Well, and just to not beat a dead horse, but the reason that the waiver mattered here is because what they didn't challenge was the Adderall prescription. So even if you said there wasn't sufficient evidence on Ambien, well, they haven't challenged that there wasn't sufficient evidence on the Adderall, and therefore you can affirm on that ground because they have waived any challenge to the Adderall.
Right, but the reason we can affirm on Adderall is not just because the government stuck two drugs in the one count. It's that he was sentenced based on Adderall. I guess that's my point. Your brief suggests, I mean, this is specifically what you say in your brief, that we can just affirm it because the government charged two drugs and he only charged one, and he only challenged one. And that seems to me to be incorrect.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying, yes.
Yeah, and you say waiver is the theory, but waiver only works because, it's not really waiver, but that only really works because he was sentenced for the higher offense that they're not challenging.
Yes. Unless the court has any further questions.
Yeah, no. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd ask that you affirm the conviction and sentence.
Great. Thank you. Ms. Lennon.
May it please the court. Regarding the waiver issue, I disagree because the conduct relied upon by the government for that professional outside the course of professional conduct applied to both Ambien and Adderall. Unless the court has further questions, we would ask the court to reverse. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Leonard. We'll move to the second case. Okay.